Before we dive into today's discussion, we've got a special resource just for you, a free ebook called Does It Make Sense to Believe in God? In today's world, where faith is often labelled as outdated or irrational, this ebook takes a fresh look at the evidence for God. It features reflections from years of engaging with some of the world's leading atheists, like Richard Dawkins, and reveals why, after hearing every conceivable argument, our confidence in God's existence is stronger than ever. Download Does It Make Sense to Believe in God today for free at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, let's get on with today's show.
From now until the end of December, tune in to Premier Christmas Radio and experience the hope, peace, love and joy that only the sounds of Christmas can bring. Enjoy hours of Christmas music, classic carols and festive favourites. Listen now on the Premier Plus app or your smart speaker. Premier Christmas Radio, the real sound of Christmas, in association with Open Doors.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am delighted to be joined once again by Dr. Holly Ordway. Holly is the Cardinal Francis George Professor of Faith and Culture at the Words on Fire Institute and Visiting Professor of Apologetics at Houston Christian University. She's written numerous books and articles about various members of the Inklings, including an absolutely fantastic spiritual biography of J.R.R. Tolkien called Tolkien's Faith, which we've talked about at length on other shows. But today we're going to be talking about Christmas. Holly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, obviously, with the C.S. Lewis podcast, our focus is normally C.S. Lewis, but Tolkien and Lewis were great friends, and they would have presumably shared some similar perspectives on Christmas owing to their Christian faith, wouldn't they?
Yes, definitely. And of course, the same English cultural context, so a lot of overlap there.
Holly, what did Christmas mean to Tolkien?
Well, that's a great question and a pretty big one, because really there's two things we can say about that. And for him, they would have been related. The first, of course, is that it's the Feast of the Nativity. So it's the birth of Christ. And that for him would have been the central meaning of it, the central and most important aspect of Christmas. But attendant with that would be the fact that it's related to family, and because the celebration of Christmas is very much a family celebration. And that was something that was really important to Tolkien. He had four children, and he spent a lot of time basically making Christmas to be a really fun time for them, and was indeed a big hit with children at Christmas in general. He, for instance, would, at least on one occasion, and probably more, went to a Christmas party for children at the Catholic chaplaincy as for the entertainment. He dressed up as a polar bear to entertain the children, and was still dressed up in his costume when he walked home through Oxford, which definitely caused a little bit of attention. So there's those two elements combined, that sense of the theological mystery and the sense of joy and fun, which for him, of course, were closely connected.
That's excellent. And Polar Bear's going to make a feature when we talk about the Father Christmas letters later. But let's focus on the nativity element, because how integral was the incarnation for Tolkien?
Really central. I mean, he had a spirituality that was deeply Christ-centered. And so this is not a sort of abstract faith. This is not a sort of vague idea of God sort of out waiting in the wings, but a very personal one, really, with a sense of Jesus as being, as being a living person who was present in Tolkien's life. For him as a Catholic, deeply connected to the Blessed Sacrament. And really, that incarnational element was just really profound for Tolkien. So much so, in fact, that he refrained from including that in his fiction. He once said that the incarnation is a thing, he said, of which I would not dare to write. And so all of his Middle Earth stories are set in a pre-Christian world. So they are the world in which he says the world of natural theology, which there's the presence of God, you know, implicit in the world, but the incarnation of Christ in Middle Earth is far in the future. And that's, you know, there's various reasons why he chose to set his stories that way. It gave him a lot of imaginative freedom to, you know, create a whole world that's still connected to our world, but different because it's separated by this chasm of time. But it also allowed him to kind of have a freedom to work with this without feeling like he was maybe treading on ground that he considered a little bit too sacred to tread on.
So then, Holly, presumably Tolkien doesn't really reference Christmas within the legendarium of Middle Earth.
There's not. The closest that we get to that is that in The Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship begins the quest. They depart from Rivendell on December the 25th. Now, of course, everybody today reading that will notice and say, oh, they left on Christmas. It's so significant. And it is and it isn't. And that's really interesting because Tolkien remarked in an interview about this very point that date had come about coincidentally, just from the sequence of events, that the timing of his characters moving through the landscape. And he decided to leave it in because, as he said, it's not a Christian myth anyway. And what did he mean by not a Christian myth? Well, he meant that in the sense, as I've just noted, Christmas was not a concept for his characters because Christ was not yet incarnate in the world of Middle Earth. So the idea of Christmas is not a thing for them in world. So that's why it's not a Christian myth in that sense. But of course, he left it in and he didn't have to, right? And he left it in, and he also then completes the circle by having the quest come to its completion and the ring destroyed on March 25th, which is in the Catholic calendar, the Feast of the Annunciation, which is the conception of Jesus. And also in medieval tradition, the date of the crucifixion in history. So that date he had more leeway on. He could have moved that a few days or a week one way or the other, depending on what he wanted to do. So I think the fact that he pegs the completion of the quest to the Annunciation is connected then to that December the 25th date. And I think what he's doing is he's on the one hand saying, okay, it's not a Christian myth. Please don't look for allegory. Everybody, The Lord of the Rings is not an allegory. It's just not. It's so not. Just don't even go there. And he wanted to make sure that was clear. But that doesn't mean that there aren't Christian resonances, because he's also very clear that there are. This is implicit. This is the foundational element. So by having that date, on the one hand, for the characters, it's just any other day. And of course, in the calendar of the Hobbits, you know, it's a different calendar. And so what date does it actually map onto in the real world? I don't know, not offhand. But the point is that for the reader, it's let the reader understand that date is not meaningful to the characters, but it does give us a little resonance in our world. And that's the kind of subtle thing that he likes to do. But that's the only reference we get to anything related to Christmas in the legendarium. And that's because he sets it in this pre-Christian world.
That's really helpful. Thanks, Holly. Do we know anything about how J.R.R. Tolkien and his family celebrated Christmas? Are there any recorded traditions or personal touches that Tolkien perhaps added to his holiday celebrations?
We know a little bit about it from the recollections of his granddaughter, Joanna, who visited with her grandparents often and stayed over there sometimes. And of course, what she experienced is probably then what he had done for his own children. And so she remembered going to midnight mass with them on Christmas. So that would have been, you know, a very important thing for them to do. That's the big celebration. So this is a thing where the Catholic tradition continuing is different from, you know, the Protestant one, in that for Catholics, the celebration that happens on Christmas Eve is the big deal. Christmas morning is, I mean, there's a celebration, but it's not the everything big and splendiferous. It's a more minor one. So the vigil, the Christmas Eve celebration, midnight mass, in Tolkien's case, would have been the big deal. So she remembers going to that with her grandparents. And she also remembered, for instance, helping to set up the nativity scene with the creche, which again, you know, that's something that would have typically been set up during the season of Advent, the 4 weeks before Christmas. And then, you know, the tradition is you set up the creche empty, though, the Jesus figure's not there. And then baby Jesus comes into it on Christmas Eve when he's born. So that's something that Joanna remembered doing with her grandfather. And so we get a sense of those traditions, you know, about anticipation and then about celebrating the birth of Christ.
And you mentioned, obviously, that he doesn't really specifically mention Christmas in his main writings, but where does Tolkien talk about Christmas, even if it's just a tiny bit, if it's just a glimpse of Christmas?
Well, there's two things that we can talk about. Three, really. There are a couple mentions, letters, and maybe talk about that first before we get into his fiction. I pulled out a couple of quotes. He's really keen to emphasize Christmas as a celebration, as opposed to the sort of commercial version of Christmas, which incidentally is something that his friend C.S. Lewis was also keen on emphasizing. Like, the commercialization of Christmas is not a thing he was thrilled about. So he wrote, for instance, in 1944, he wrote to his son, "Today is the last day for posting, sending packages, in time for Christmas. And though I resent the way in which this feast of peace and joy is made into a labor, not to say a nightmare of shabby commercialism," there's a good many letters that I have to send before he goes on to say, before I go on to finish his shopping. So he emphasizes that it's a feast of peace and joy. And he's quite aware that the commercial element can make that feast of peace and joy, with its, you know, generosity of gift giving, into a labor and a burden, which we can all relate to. And, you know, trying to get to the post office in time to send things out, and being stressed about that. And then in another letter, much later in 1962, he writes to one other of his sons, "Well, here comes Christmas, that astonishing thing that no commercialism can in fact defile, unless you let it." And I think those two quotes from the letters really speak to his attitude, you know, about this, that he's aware of the way that the commercial pressure and all the junk in the shops and the pressure to do this can in fact obscure the reality of it. But he doesn't become just a Grinch. You know, he's still out there doing his Christmas shopping, but he wants to resist it, and he wants to keep that emphasis on the peace and the joy of it. And I think that connects it in then to the two literary works where we really do see that. One of them is a poem called Noel, and the other is his very famous Father Christmas letters. So which do you want to talk about first, Ruth?
Let's talk about Noel, if that's okay. This is a poem. And before we dive into the poem, I guess it's helpful to think about, we obviously know Tolkien as a prose writer predominantly, but do we know whether Tolkien saw himself as a poet?
It depends on the era, because when he was a young man, all the way into, you know, his sort of late 20s, early 30s, he was still thinking of himself primarily as a poet. And this is not very well known. Well, up until now, there've just been released this massive 3-volume set of his collected poetry. So I suspect this is going to become more well known than it is now. But a lot of writers of his time really thought about poetry as their primary mode. Poetry was a much more vibrant, literary and popular thing than it is now. But then when he got into writing The Hobbit, he really showed his strength as a writer of prose fiction, and, you know, and then there was no looking back. But he did see himself as a poet, and he did write poetry through his whole life. And this poem, Noel, is one of them.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
As we approach the end of the year, I want to take a moment to reflect on the incredible work God has done through Premier Insight in 2024. This year, we've launched new podcasts like Rico Tice's and provided impactful books and resources, and we've shared the powerful N.T. Wright videos to help people grow in wisdom and share their faith with clarity and compassion. But this ministry wouldn't be possible without you. Your generosity has equipped countless believers to live out their faith. Right now, we face a $112,129 funding gap that must be closed by December the 31st to sustain this vital work. Your gift today will not only help us finish this year strong, but also lay the foundation for exciting plans we have for 2025. Visit premierinsight.org to give today. Together, let's make an eternal impact for God's kingdom. Thank you for your generosity. And now, let's get back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. There's an interesting parallel there, isn't there, then, with Lewis, who also is predominantly remembered for his prose, even though he wanted to be a poet. His first published work was a work of poetry.
Yeah, it's interesting because that in that time period, as I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of interest in poetry as a form. And so both of them intended originally to be poets and then became primarily prose writers. And I think a good thing in both of them. They both end up having their real gifts in prose writing. I will say, I think that Lewis was the better poet. I mean, Tolkien, I'm glad that Tolkien shifted over into writing prose. I mean, he does have a few really good poems, but in terms of his overall corpus, I think Lewis was the stronger poet overall. Tolkien, I think, the gravitational pull of messing about with languages and also the gravitational pull of Middle Earth end up shaping his poetic corpus in some ways that are just interesting. A lot of the poetry that he wrote, like his best poetry really in some ways, makes its way into Lord of the Rings as the kinds of things that the characters say and the characters sing. And it's really skillfully crafted. And I think that's where kind of his heart was and kind of giving his characters things to say.
Yeah.
Or if not where his heart was, where a lot of his gifting was.
Yeah.
But this poem, Noel, is interesting because I think it's one of his really strongest poems. And it's the only sort of serious Christmas work that we have from him. It's written, we don't actually know when it was written, but it was published in 1936. In the annual of Our Lady's School, Abingdon, a Catholic school in his area. We don't know anything about it in terms of why it was they published it, but he did have, you know, positive connections with a number of Catholic schools and a local convent. So it's quite likely that he just knew the sisters there, and they said, you know, hey, you know, Mr. Tolkien, would you mind contributing something? And he probably said, well, sure. And he wrote this poem, and it's really interesting because it gives us a Gloria and a Magnificat sort of combined in with Christmas. It begins, grim was the world and gray last night. The moon and stars were fled. The hall was dark without song or light. The fires were fallen dead. The wind in the trees was like to the sea, and over the mountain's teeth, it whispered bitter cold and free as a sword leapt from its sheath. So we start with this very wintry, cold, biting scene. You know, again, he's sort of imagining the English context, a cold winter. And then the next part of the poem, we have the birth of the child. And then he says, on one voice on a sudden sang, then all the bells in heaven and earth together at midnight rang. And we have a bit of an echo of that, sort of the midnight mass and the celebration. But what's really, I think, striking about this poem is the next to last stanza. Mary sang in the world below. They heard her song arise or mist or mountain snow to the walls of paradise. And the tongue of many bells was stirred in heaven's towers to ring when the voice of mortal maid was heard that was mother of heaven's king. And it closes with, and Gloria, Gloria, we will sing that God on earth is come. And there's just so many interesting elements here. He's sort of setting it in, you know, the wintry world of the north, of England. But he's imagining it in the context of the Gloria, which is often associated with Easter. Yeah. You know, and he's also giving it a sense of the Magnificat, of Mary's song of praise, which is associated with March, with the Annunciation. So we have here Mary in his picture of the scene. Mary is offering a song of praise at the birth of her son. And this is a kind of a Gloria. And it's just really, it's quite a moving poem. It's in the collected poems now, published in full. And you can also find it online pretty easily. And it's quite moving. It's a serious poem. And it stands alone, unlike most of his poetry. It's not connected to Middle Earth at all.
And am I right in thinking that it was only published to a wide audience fairly recently?
Just this year, really, because the collected poems just came out, and until then had only been published in this ephemeral magazine, published in 1936 by these religious sisters. So it was discovered a few years ago, and someone just found it in the archives. And so it's been known to exist for a few years, but this is the first time it's been properly republished.
Brilliant. Well, it's a great time to be talking about it. Holly, is this one of Tolkien's most overtly Christian works, would you say then? And you've obviously pulled out some of those beautiful lines there, but how does the poem reflect his religious beliefs?
Well, I mean, it is one of his more overtly Christian works, because most of his writing was in his legendarium, and that was deliberately not overtly Christian. So it's just a question of proportion. And I think it's useful to see it isn't that he was avoiding writing overtly Christian things. It was just that the amount of time he devoted to his legendarium sort of took all of his energy. Yeah, so I think we see that he's able to imaginatively enter into the scene and to get us a sense of that personal connection, to place the birth of Christ, you know, in the cold, in the dark, in the winter. We could almost feel him sitting next to a drafty window, you know, with feeling the gust and tugging his jacket around him a little bit more as he writes this. And just also that sense of the importance of Mary, you know, as the mother of God. Mm. And that Mary was a really important figure in his devotional life. I mean, she's the one who gives us her son. She's the one who always points to her son and says, do whatever he tells you. And he always pointed to Mary as an image of beauty and humility, and that Marian quality was really important to Tolkien. And I think we see that in the way that he's, you know, the centerpiece of the poem, obviously, is the birth of Christ. Mm-hmm. But we give Mary's voice of praise at this. And so we can join in with her voice of praise, because, you know, for Catholics, Mary is the perfect disciple. We should imitate her in obeying her son. And so there's that sense of kind of participation in her song, that Gloria.
And do we have a sense that there was a particular message that Tolkien wanted his readers to glean about Christmas through this poem?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, he really wasn't big on explicit messages. Mm-hmm. I think he worked more thematically, and I mean, that's consistent with all of what he's doing. He's not a message kind of guy. Yeah. He's working with the imagery and the ideas. So there's various things we can take out of it. We can understand, you know, the importance of the incarnation, also the humility of it. You know, the child being born in the dark and the cold and the unknown little place, and the role of Mary, all of this, and the beauty of it. The beauty combined with the darkness. That's a recurring theme in his work. Mm. Beauty found in darkness. But all of these are then themes that, as he would say, we can apply to our particular circumstances. But he was generally pretty hands-off about having direct messages.
Yeah. Holly, what does this poem, Noel, contribute to our overall understanding of J.R.R. Tolkien as an author and a thinker, do you think? And are there aspects of his worldview that this poem reveals that we perhaps don't see so apparently in his other works?
Well, I think a useful thing about this poem is that it reminds us that he was a very sincere Christian, and that this was something that was important to him, and that it came out in his work as the opportunity arose. And I think because so much of his writing in his legendarium is not explicitly Christian. It's implicitly so, but not explicitly so. There has been a very long-standing tendency for readers and even scholars to kind of compartmentalize his faith and to say, oh, yeah, yeah, he was a Christian, but it doesn't really matter. And that's something that, you know, I took up in my book, Tolkien's Faith, to really explore, well, what was his faith and how did it matter to him? And I really realized in my research that he was very integrated as a man, as a believer, and that it's not possible to compartmentalize him in that way without really doing violence to his personality, to his creative impulses, to his artistic capacity. And I think there's a long way to go in terms of recognizing this, the way that his faith was really integral. Because on the one hand, you can't compartmentalize him and say, yeah, yeah, there was his faith and we're just going to look at all of his work and ignore that. But conversely, sometimes Christians get a little bit too excited about, he's on our team. And then they want to sort of make everything explicitly Christian and write, you know, books and do talks or to present Lord of the Rings as if it were some sort of gospel allegory. It is not. It's so not. It's got these Christian resonances, but he does everything implicitly, subtly, indirectly. It's not an allegory. I've said that many times. It doesn't hurt to say it again. And I think quite understandably, you know, there are many, 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 many readers of Tolkien who are of different religious faiths or don't have a religious faith at all. All faiths and none love Tolkien. Mm. And I think quite understandably, folks who are not Christians can get a bit put off when they see Christians sort of touting Tolkien's writings as if they're like little gospel guides or something like that. And I think that can make them a little bit shy about even wanting to talk about Tolkien as a Christian, as a Catholic, because they're afraid that they're going to get it shoved down their throats. And I regret that, because that's not how Tolkien was. He was a very sincere Christian, and he wasn't shy about that. He talked about it often in interviews. He was just free about it. But he was never pushy. That was something I really noticed. He was never pushy. Open, but not intrusive, which is it's a good thing to observe and to role model. And his faith is an important element in his work, but it's not like the master key that unlocks the message. That's not how his mind worked. That's not how his creativity worked. And to say that it is actually to oversimplify and really degrade the value of his work. So I would say to anybody who's, you know, listening to this, who's not a Christian, like, don't be afraid of looking at this element of his work, because it was really important to him. And so if we are interested in his thought, it's natural. We should be interested in what it meant to him and just sort of see how it plays out in his work. And so we do see that. And a poem like Noel is useful in the way that it reminds us that he didn't have these watertight compartments. And when he had the occasion to write a poem specifically about Christmas, that's the direction he moves in, the theological side of it, and not the sort of just the secular celebration part of it. And I think that maybe gives us a good opening to talk about the other major work that he did on Christmas, which is the Father Christmas letters.
Holly, thank you so much. That was such a helpful clarification. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable.
Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.